On Shaw i Leopardstown, Christmas means one thing. Rossioch at its very best, where champions meet challengers and Cordia reunite. From Nullag 26th to 29th, the biggest names, August Nicopolis Far, take to one of jump racing's most iconic stages. Och, ni stoppin' on crack on shin. It's a celebration that will have the crowds igdausa long after the final race. Unwrap the magic of racing at Leopardstown Christmas Festival. Visit leopardstown.com. Nullag Hunadiev.
Football on off the ball.
Oh, but I think they have to. I mean, what's the alternative? That they say it's like, no, you have to play him. Well, Schlott's response to that would be, well, okay, if you're picking the team, in what sense am I actually the coach, you know?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The news run on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening, you're welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. We've got a full slate of Champions League fixtures to keep you up to speed on all night long. Inter Milan versus Liverpool, I dare say, is going to be the one we're going to be inspecting closest throughout the evening. Mo Salah, of course, not in the squad. If you've been living under a rock for the last couple of days, we'll bring you that team news very shortly, which involves those who are in Milan. We've got a brilliant show coming your way between now and the end of the night. So 7:30, Ellen Walsh is going to join us on the line. She is the first Irish woman to ever win a European short course title. She won gold in the 200 metre butterfly in Poland on Sunday, won a silver in the individual medley as well the day previous. So a couple of medals and a hell of a haul for Team Ireland in Poland over the course of that meet. So really looking forward to catching up with her. Between 8 and 9 then, we're going to be focusing on all things Gaelic Games. Paul Ganey's going to join us for a chat. Dingle are Munster champions for the first time in their club's history. They beat St Finbarr's in incredible circumstances, really, on Sunday. So Paul is going to join us for a chat after 8 o'clock. Also that hour, Ciara Murphy is going to join us in studio. He's written his second book, which is called Old Parish. And it's a brilliant piece of writing, really, about essentially picking up hurling in your 40s. It's about a lot more than that, but that is the initial gist and the initial hook of the book. And then after 9 o'clock, the football show featuring Luis Miguel Echegaray is coming your way. We'll, of course, be keeping you up to speed and everything that happens in the Champions League that hour as well. Luis Miguel has written a book called Messi Mania. He's going to talk to us about Lionel Messi winning the MLS Cup with Inter Miami over the course of the weekend. He still hasn't committed to the 2026 World Cup, even though he signed a contract until 2028 with the club. So we'll be speaking to LME, as we're allowed to abbreviate his name to, after 9 o'clock to get to the bottom of that. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp message. Cameron Hill is here for the news round. Hello, Cameron.
Good evening, Owen.
Michael McCarthy is here. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Owen.
Ciara Murphy with us between 8 and 9 tonight. The premise of the book, one of those premises you're like, God, I wish I thought of that. The idea of picking up hurling out of the blue in your 40s is a really, really good one. Breaking down the mystique of the hurling man is how I would view it. Your people, Mick, are a welcoming sort, it seems.
Certainly in Waterford, anyway. I know, there's all that. I think GA people are welcoming everywhere. Yeah, it's a really interesting premise for a book. Fascinating idea, I have to say, and really enjoyed listening to the story about it. I do feel like we missed an opportunity of just bringing back Murph's Country Pages instead for the night, but you know, there we go. Yeah, look, I mean, I'm particularly fascinated by it. One bit that he talks about that people will hear later on is the idea that people who don't know anything about hurling in his life are kind of going, geez, you'll be killed. You know, which kind of always strikes me as like, that's my experience with people who've never played hurling or who don't really know it. It's like, I feel like it's one of those things that actually might hold back the game, this sense of wild danger in it. Whereas I think within the game, and I even see it like, honestly, like at like the under sixes, under fives kind of like little training games that I watch now, it's like there's no mad danger to it. They're not automatically scared of running in and swinging sticks, but there's something about watching it from outside that just, this wooden weapon, and the older you get, the faster it's played, and just appearing as wild as can possibly be, is just associated with this sort of sense of danger, as if it's like it's a sport for only, like, you know, wild men and lunatics.
I mean, if you're a wild man and or a lunatic, you're probably going to be better at hurling than some more sane people, I would suggest.
I don't know if that's the truth. I really don't. I think there is an element of it's sometimes seen as bravery, but I don't think it is. I think it comes automatically to you if you're sort of within the game. And I think what might be needed is maybe a lack of cowardice. But I don't think that should be translated as bravery. I think they are slightly different. You know, I don't think you need to be particularly... I just don't see it as a particularly dangerous game. What injuries do we really see in hurling that we don't see in every other sport currently? Except for especially now in the helmet era.
Yeah,
you get the odd gruesome thing through the face guard that happens once in a blue moon. But really it isn't a current thing. Whereas I do feel like a lot of people who admire it from afar do have this sense of, yeah, but geez, I wouldn't let my kids play it, you know, or you'd want to be mad, you know, out there. The usual, you know, Americans always have to describe it as a cross between, so it's like hockey and lacrosse or whatever, you know what I mean? But I think somebody, maybe it was a comedian once, described it as a cross between hockey and murder.
Oh, well, I'll tell you exactly who described it as that. It was Jason Statham. What was that movie? It wasn't Snatch, it was something else.
I wouldn't be familiar with it, so I must have heard it secondhand somewhere along the line. Yeah,
He goes down, it's like a typical Jason Statham moment where he's going down like a dark alley and these tree thugs kind of come out of nowhere and they're like, give me your money. And he produces a hurley. Okay. And he's like, have you ever heard of hurling, boys? It's a mix between lacrosse and murder. And then he proceeds to decapitate all three of them with this hurley that he has.
Do you think it both raises the lore of hurling and the kind of mythical nature of it, but also genuinely holds it back as a growing sport around the country?
No, I would disagree with that. So I was over in Rome for the Six Nations earlier this year, and as part of the, unfortunately, I can't find the tapes, so they're part of Cameron Hill's Lost Tapes, which will be released sometime in 2030. But I was talking to a lot of the members of the Rome Hibernia GAA club, and apparently among like European teams, hurling is the big one that everyone's trying to take up. They're so fascinated by it, and it's not just people who've moved over from Ireland to these places, it's natives who are coming to the clubs. I want to have a go at that. They're not really interested in football at all anymore. There's apparently a club in Germany where there's only Germans playing hurling, which is just a great sentence. But it is the one because of that sort of mythology and the idea around it and the fact that it's so unique and it's so linked back to Irish mythology and Cú Chulainn and everything, that there's that added element. I don't think the violence really comes into it at all when they're making that decision.
No, I think as well, like when we talk about sort of the role of hurling in the country, I think one of the things that we often get back when we're speaking to people in counties who aren't contending for Liam McCarthy is the idea that more young people, more children need to be getting hurls or hurleys into their hands at a very, very young age. And the Gerlach Nan quote comes up a couple of times in the book, that unless you've been playing hurling from the age of seven, you really don't stand a chance of making it as a top player in the sport. And that's what it comes back to. You know, Liam Griffin's been very vocal about this over the past couple of years, that not enough people are actually getting hurleys into their hands at a young age. Yeah. When we have autonomy later in life, it's easy to do it and easy to pick it up and be involved in a club. But if you want to enjoy something, you kind of have to be good at it. And to be good at this specific thing, you need to start it pretty early in life.
They say, and look, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't very good at it and did start it early in life. So I'm not in a position to say what it's like to pick up later. But at the same time, I do wonder if there's a little bit of kind of, I don't like the idea of hurling snobbery. I'm not as behind it as a lot of people would be as a kind of an ongoing thing. But I do wonder if, like, I remember there was an element, there was a Dublin when they were on their kind of late Anthony Daly run, when they were sort of still really good, but they weren't really in that sort of 2013 All-Ireland contender level. And I remember they lost, like, you know, maybe 2015, 2016, losing a game to Galway or something. And all the analysis is like, you know, they don't have the wrists, they don't have the skill. And I was like, I'm sorry, but they do. They're inter-county hurlers in one of the main hurling counties that have been playing with their club all their life. It's not like, you know, you're talking about a level where they certainly are able to hit the ball.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? But this is what they were sitting on the Sunday game, casually talking about how the Dublin hurlers didn't have the wrists, you know, because that's sort of a little bit inbuilt in hurling people, is that like if you're not doing this since the age of two, hitting the ball against a wall in Kilkenny, then you're shite at hurling.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't really buy it, you know.
I think we've all had as well our kind of like flirtations with hurling at some point in our childhoods, that, you know, it's been present, but never forced into our lives enough in certain parts of the country. Like my experience, obviously, would have been football only. But I remember Thursday nights in the hall in the GAA pitch, the Tipperary man in the village would be setting up ground hurling classes in the hall on a Thursday night, and everybody would get a chance to actually play. But it never actually developed from there.
Not part of your tradition.
Never part of the tradition. But it was part of this person's tradition. And as somebody who had moved to the place, they managed to, you know, try and let this thing blossom. But it had to be somebody from one of those powerhouse counties. Yeah. You couldn't have somebody who's from a football playing part of Kerry set this thing up, because how could you possibly do that when actually maybe the...
You're betraying Kerry's football.
Yeah, well, but also maybe do we over mystify the whole thing, especially when it comes to getting hurlies into young people's hands?
Especially at that age, especially as like, what do you need to do? And it's like, again, like just literally just because I coincidentally happened to be for the first time in my life at that stage where it is literally the start of the first time you ever pick up a thing in like, you know, in a nursery GA. And it's like, you know, they have six drills that you go around for over the course of an hour. Half of them are hurling and half of them are football. And when you go and do the hurling ones, you put on a helmet and you pick up your hurley and then you do different things with it. And it's just, it's so automatic because it's inbuilt in you. But again, why do you need a special expertise in hurling to do that? And I do feel like we just miss a trick so much as a country. Like, it's all very well. Like, that's a lovely idea that you guys did that on a Thursday night as part of your everything. But, like, I mean, I played uni hock in, you know, in our, you know, on a Thursday night in our youth centre. You know what I mean? I wasn't going to suddenly, you know, take up ice hockey.
Yeah.
You know, when I got, like, you know, it was never on the cards, let's say. You know what I mean? We concentrated on what we concentrated on. And it's so hard to implement a tradition.
That'd have sated your bloodlust there for a while.
Yeah, well, another sport I'm sure is massively misunderstood, but maybe not either. But going back to like, I wonder, what you were saying there, Cameron, is an interesting idea about, like, you know, it being in some ways almost kind of like this exotic thing for non-Irish people to look at, and I understand that, but I think of it more as like a how do we put it as more of a, when say people in Dublin, for example, where there's a strong dual tradition but it's more of a football understanding among most people, when they bring their kids and they think, oh, hurling's a little bit too dangerous, how do we take that out of the mindset, you know? And I do think that's, like, I would have concerns, say, with rugby, certainly boxing, things that I see the massive benefits in kids taking part in. But you just would have those concerns, you know, from a safety point of view. I would have zero concerns about hurling from that point of view. You could get a wild slap, you could get something that happens, but in terms of like life changing, absolutely not. You know what I mean? But I don't know if like the average parent who doesn't think too much about it and is just bringing their kids to sport sees hurling in that way. Whereas, like, I would see no safety issues whatsoever with it.
On Shaw in Leopardstown, Christmas means one thing. Rossiach at its very best, where champions meet challengers and Cordia reunite. From Nullag 26th to 29th, the biggest names, August Nicopolis Far, take to one of jump racing's most iconic stages. Och, ni stoppin' on crack on shin. It's a celebration that will have the crowds igdausa long after the final race. Unwrap the magic of racing at Leopardstown Christmas Festival. Visit leopardstown.com. Nullag Hona Diav.
Indulge in holiday cravings with the nutrition you need from Kachava's all-in-one whole body shake. It's 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Try their newest flavors, like the limited edition chocolate mint. With Kachava, you're getting the highest quality ingredients. No fillers, no nonsense. Holiday nutrition has never been this easy or delicious. Go to Kachava, KACHAVA.com, and use code FITNESS for 15% off.
A couple of points of information. Blitz is the name of the Jason Statham movie I was trying to think of earlier, and Noel Cahill has been in touch on YouTube to say that Sean O'Gohalpin begs to differ with the Sherlock Nan quote.
Absolutely,
he started late.
He's the best example of all time. Kind of a freak athlete, though, Sean Oak.
You would have to say he's a bit of an exception.
Not the greatest sample size there, no.
Yeah. Cameron, we should start with the news round. I presume it is Champions League Central to kick things off.
Indeed. So Liverpool, as is probably well known at this stage, without Mo Salah for tonight's Champions League game at Inter, after claims his relationship with manager Arne Slot had broken down. The forward suggested he's been thrown under the bus for the club's poor form this season after being dropped to the bench at the weekend, and Slot says he had no option but to leave Salah at home this time.
Usually I'm calm and polite, but that doesn't mean I'm weak. If a player has these commands about so many things, then it's about me, us as a club to react. And we reacted in a way you can see now that he's not here.
You have the team news?
Yeah, the big news from Arne Slot's team selection is that Florian Wirtz has dropped to the bench this evening. There are four changes from the side that drew at Leeds. Alexander Isak back in the starting lineup this evening.
Okay, very good. So we'll be looking at this as the night progresses. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff at San Siro. As you've mentioned, Mo Salah, the latest thing that we've seen today is that he is allowed into the Liverpool training centre. So
with his shoes off. Did you see that?
I mean, he's in the gym with his shoes off?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a
total. That's more egregious than everything else that's gone on, that he goes into
the
gym.
Well, he's on his own. He can do what he
wants.
He
jogs out.
He's running. The parents are away. Pointed. Running the gym today.
Like, yeah.
I wouldn't have been particularly surprised if they had like changed his key card or something today as well after excluding him from the San Siro squad, and he wouldn't have been able to get in. But it's good that he's proved to everybody that he's still allowed into the gym and he's still very much a part of the football club and keeping himself fit.
I didn't realise I followed Mo Salah on Instagram, which suggests to me that he doesn't post all that often. So I was surprised to see his story today.
And you follow him? It wasn't a suggested for you?
No, it was in the stuff at the top. That's only people you follow, isn't it, when the stories pop up there? But anyway, I suppose what I mean is I don't think Mo Salah is the most prolific of Instagram posters.
No. To be fair, when he's on social media, he does tend to make a point. Like, one of the kind of pieces, because like we're analysing so much the Mo Salah season so far, given what's happened over the course of the weekend. Do you remember his post at the start of the year?
Yeah, I was going to mention this, yeah.
There was this Liverpool fan page that had mentioned the upgrades that Liverpool had acquired over the course of the summer, and he quote-tweeted him as like basically put some respect on Luis Diaz and Darwin Nunez's name. Wonder if that was a little bit of smoke at the start of the season.
Well, do you remember the tweet he had around, was it a UEFA post around all the people who died in Gaza? And he clapped by and tell me where and how they all died. Like, he's become more outspoken in a general sense over the last 6 months or so, which, I don't know, it's like, in the politest sense, it's kind of like, I learned the word umarol, which is a Bologna term for an old man who gives out about roadworks, that there is a little bit of grumpy old manness about him. That I think John Bruin was making the point that it seems like Mo Salah is going to be one of those players who's going to really struggle with the idea that his body's breaking down and he's not able to do what he can anymore. And it does feel like he's just sort of biting back at things, like maybe Arne Slot at some point is going to go, look, we just can't have you behind the wheel of the car anymore, Mo. Like, you're a danger to yourself and other people on the road. We're going to have to take away your privileges. That it does feel like he's clapping back at this and getting very animated around a bunch of things, not necessarily just what's happened in Liverpool this season, that it's been part of this general outspokenness.
Yeah, I think you could make the case, though, that, I mean, he has a bit of a point in terms of how long I've been taken away from the wheel of the car. And it was probably the right decision in the first place for Arne Slot to remove him from that position as kind of an experimental thing. Like, there's a chance, I wonder, in an alternate universe, if he doesn't go to the press and go to the mix zone on Saturday evening, if he's actually starting tonight for Liverpool. I don't think it had got to the stage where it had actually been confirmed that Arne Slot just saw no plan for him whatsoever in a starting 11 ever again. But I guess we'll never know, and maybe we'll never see Salah in a Liverpool shirt again.
I think it's more and more certain that we won't now, isn't it? Which is, I think, sad. But it's funny, I heard a few people today like make the comparison to Roy Keane. And I think it's something that we have to remember as well when we're in the moment. It's like the Roy Keane departure from Manchester United is a huge part of his story and a huge part of his legacy. But it hasn't in any way undermined his relationship with Manchester United fans. It's always like, it's a big thing. It's not forgotten about or anything like that. It's still there. But it's also, so are the titles and being the best leader that club has ever had and so on. So I don't think like what Mo Salah, what happens and what happens over the next few weeks is going to define Mo Salah's Liverpool career.
But do you think the fact that they feel wronged enhances their legacy among the fans? Like if Mo Salah went off quietly into the good night, so well, that's kind of it, and he ends up leaving in January. Does that tarnish his legacy a bit, or is there a sort of defiance?
His defiance is about himself, though, isn't it? Rather than like getting the most for Liverpool, like you saw Jamie Carragher's rant last night, for want of a better word. You know, you kind of got the sense like Carragher or Salah predicted it the night before, that Carragher would speak on behalf of the club here and the club's fans and the Liverpool Addy, for want of a better word, Errati, Liverpool Errati. And, you know, he's the bad guy here, like, you know.
His legs are gone, Mo Salah, the coach, Jimmy Carragher. What's next, Cameron?
Well, Chelsea winger Alejandro Garnacho says he has no regrets about how he left Manchester United, speaking of departures. The Argentina international fell out with Old Trafford boss Ruben Amorim before heading to Stamford Bridge in the summer. United are without European football this season, while Garnacho is preparing to face Italian side Atalanta in the Champions League tonight.
Yeah, sometimes in life you have to change things to maybe take a step forward or to improve as a player. And yeah, I think it was the right moment, also the right club. So yeah, it was an easy decision.
There are five changes for Chelsea from that pretty underwhelming draw at Bournemouth over the weekend. Joshua Acheampong, Jimmy Gittens, Moises Caicedo, João Pedro and Benoit Badiashile all start for the visitors for that trip to Bergamo.
So they sent Garnacho out to do media and he's not starting?
No.
So that's a fairly brutal thing. I'm looking through the very, very long bench. He is on the bench tonight for Chelsea. What's next?
Well, Tottenham boss Thomas Frank says he's not overthinking their poor home record heading into tonight's Champions League clash with Slavia Prague in North London. Saturday's win against Brentford was Spurs' first Premier League victory at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium since they beat Burnley on the opening weekend.
Champions League, Premier League, Carabao Cup, for me, we play home, no matter the competition. So that's why it's never as good or as bad as we always think and talk about.
And two changes to Spurs tonight from that win over Keith Andrews' side at the weekend. Randall Kolo Muani and Rodrigo Bentancur both on the bench in favour, or instead, João Paulinho and Wilson Odegaard come into the side. And you've the Women's Champions League as well tonight, Owen. Arsenal taking on Dutch outfit Twente from 8 o'clock. Katie McCabe starting in that one.
0879 180 180 is our number. Texting here that says underage hurling coaching is far too competitive. Even at under 10s and under 12s, it's all about winning and not about fun. It's worse after that when all the big players start every game. Joe, the ex-footballer in Kildare, has been in touch to say, "Hey lads, I took up hurling in my 40s as my young lad took it up, and I ended up coaching him from under 7s up. He's in under 14s now and I play on the junior team. We kind of learnt the skills together. I did have imposter syndrome for a good while though. I never played in my youth as my club was football only." That's class.
I love it. Absolutely love it. I just think that, and again, this doesn't have to be always about rising, you know, in Kildare, obviously, in the Lee McCarthy Championship this year, so that's great in itself. But it's not about rising like Cavan or Mayo or anything to the level of winning All-Irelands. It's about everybody in the country getting a chance to play hurling and it being a part of their life. It doesn't really matter what happens at county level. We worry about that so much. It's just like, don't have the game be dead in half the country, you know. So I actually, yeah, the coaching thing is interesting as well, but I think in fairness I would say that's a problem in all sports.
Yeah, to be fair, and there's also maybe a GAA specific thing as well that
maybe,
kind of combines
maybe a problem
things.
In all GAA then. Yeah.
On to the next piece of news, Cameron. This involves Evan Ferguson.
Yeah, grim stuff for Evan Ferguson by the sounds of things in Italian media today. He could see his loan spell at Roma come to a premature end this January. Italian media reporting today that the Serie A club are hoping to return Ferguson to his parent club Brighton in the upcoming window. Ferguson has made 14 appearances and scored just the one goal since arriving in the Italian capital this summer on a loan mood. So Gazzetta dello Sport had this today, starting the piece with, "If we haven't yet reached the end credits, we're almost there. The story between Evan Ferguson and Roma is destined to last only a short time, perhaps even just those four games remaining until the transfer window opens. Then in January, the Irish striker will almost certainly return home to Brighton, to the club where 3 years ago he nearly became a sensation, but never made it to the top." This is brutal. "In short, Roma's decision has now been made, so much so that discussions have begun with the club that owns him, Brighton. And it's no coincidence that 3 days ago, Fabian Hertzler, the English coach," that's a direct quote, "considered the possibility, also due to the knee injury that will sideline Stefanos Tsimas, the Greek under-21 centre forward, for a long time. A return for Ferguson, he says, we'll see. In January, we'll try to improve the team. We need to understand what changes we want to make."
Yeah, there's something quite poetic about hearing Gazzetta dello Sport in English. It's not the first time we've been hearing Evan Ferguson things translated, and they always sound way more positive or way more negative than the positivity or negativity that they're actually supposed to be. We'll actually come back to this after 9 o'clock on the football show, because we should get through some of the rest of your stories. Cameron, where are you heading to next?
Well, Colin O'Brien is set to leave the head coach role of the Republic of Ireland under 17 zone. The Corkman guided the side to the last 16 of their first ever World Cup in Qatar last month. The FAI are currently undertaking what they've described as a transformation process, with as many as 60 jobs to be axed by the association. O'Brien has been told he would need to reapply for the role if he would like to continue, with significant changes made to the contract. He's one of a number of underage coaches leaving their roles, with under-19 men's manager Tom Moen and women's under-19 boss Dave Connell also set to depart.
Okay, let's do a roundup of the day's rugby news.
Well, Munster out half Jack Crowley remains a doubt for this weekend's Champions Cup pool clash at home to Gloucester. He was ruled out of their 40-14 defeat away to Bath on Saturday night, having picked up an ankle injury the week before against the Stormers. The province also suffered a pair of late dropouts before that game at the Rec. Michael Milne went down in the warm-up with an ankle problem. Sean Clain pulled out of the game due to personal reasons, but apparently they all trained today and a decision will be made later in the week around their availability. Craig Casey has signed a 2-year contract extension with Munster today. He made his debut for the province on senior level in 2019 and will now extend his stay until 2028. And the IRFU has confirmed that Ireland will play one of their women's Six Nations matches in Galway next season. Italy will be the visitors to Dexcom Stadium on Saturday the 18th of April. Ireland will play Wales in Belfast on May 9th before rounding off their tournament and then against Scotland at the Aviva Stadium on the 17th of May.
We might run through the Gaelic Games and swimming stories to wrap up then.
Yeah, the details have been confirmed for the All-Ireland Club Senior Hurling semi-finals later this month. Leinster champion St Martins will face Munster kingpins Ballygunner at Semple Stadium in Thurles, while Parnell Park will host the meeting of Ulster's Shocknil and Loughrea of Connacht. Both Final Four clashes are scheduled for Sunday, December 21st. A second Irish swimmer has confirmed they have signed for the Enhanced Games. Paris Olympian Max McCusker will join Shane Ryan at the event, in which athletes are allowed to use performance-enhancing drugs under medical supervision. McCusker competed in the 4x100 metres medley relay in Paris last summer and holds the national records in the 50 metres and 100 metres butterfly. And I might just finish with this one, Owen. Peter Odemwingie's QPR shirt that was made ahead of his failed move from West Brom is due to go under the hammer. The striker thought he'd secured a deadline day transfer in 2013, but was refused entry to Loftus Road after both clubs said a fee hadn't been agreed. QPR's head of retail had an Odemwingie shirt made up in anticipation, which will now go to auction.
How much is that going to go for?
It's a great idea. It's a great idea. I don't know. But it would have retailed at about, what, 60?
Yeah. I know you're a football cliches fan, Owen. They did a piece on how, you know, depending on what shirt or what player used the shirt, the RRP, it exceeds the RRP after a certain point. Which player has such a prestige that a secondhand jersey would completely match the RRP if it went to auction? Like, would you sell it for 100 again?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Depending on which match and whatever.
I'd pay for a knockoff version of this Odemwingie jersey. I'm surprised
hasn't
thought of this.
It's a great idea for a jersey, in fairness, isn't it? Yeah.
Cameron, thank you very much for tonight's news round. We'll be keeping up to speed on everything that happens throughout the evening, as well as the Champions League fixtures unfold. Still to come, Ellen Walsh is going to join us after the break. She's going to catch up with us after a magnificent week, really, for the Irish swimmers in Poland. Paul Genny's after 8 o'clock. Kieran Murphy talking about his book, All Parishes, before 9 o'clock. And then the football show with Luis Miguel Echegaray, talking Messi, talking Aston Villa as well, after 9 o'clock on the football show.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.